For the IP committee, I have approval of minutes for June 4th, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries.
I do have one item.
County manager.
Yeah, thank you. Just one item and apologies. We received it and figured to get ahead of the good weather, probably if you're willing to consider it today. And this is the agricultural land lease for the 7 acres or so of usable land that we have from across the jail. We did put that out. We had three respondents. It was Jamie Rumsey submitted under Pelham Electric to pay us $150 an acre, which would be $1,050 for the next 3 years. And then it would go up to $175 an acre for 28 through 30. So that was the high bid. So we are recommending it.
Motion.
I'll second.
Second.
I think hanging it. Yeah.
What's that?
That's why you were asked.
With the stores, yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Outside agencies. Southeast Steuben Libraries.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Thank you for having us. So my name is Sally Jacoby Murphy. I'm the director of the Fred and Harriet Taylor Memorial Library in Hammondsport, New York. I am thrilled to be here with three of my colleagues. So we have Candy Wilson of Savona, Denise Chilson of Hornell, and Elizabeth Cowley of Wayland. First off, I'm happy to report that our libraries are back to pre-pandemic numbers. We are seeing those numbers or above in all categories, including checkouts, walk-in traffic, and programming attendance. Across the system, we are also seeing usage grow and innovations increase. These increases are certainly true for my library in Hammondsport. We have had the busiest winter and spring in my 5 years as director, and I can't wait to see what our summer looks like. We have 45 programs planned for all ages in the month of July, and they start today, which is super exciting. I'm a little nervous, but it'll be great. I did bring some calendars. If anybody wants to look at them at any point, I'd love to give them to you. It's sure to be crazy, but I'm excited about it. And we'd absolutely love to have any of you or your families join us at any point. Our library is also seeing an increase of spaceage use by many local groups, from county health support networks to the Boy Scouts to our local political parties. We are also becoming an important space for emergency shelter and the Red Cross, and we have had folks join us in recent days for flood watches, tornadoes, and as a needed respite in this heat. We all need that. It seems every week something is bringing a new group in, and we are thrilled to be able to answer the call. I'm going to pass it along to Elizabeth. Oh, sure. They are open to anyone. So our library, we are very fortunate. We work really closely together. So your library card will even work at any of our 48 member libraries. So if you have a card here in Bath, you could come to Hammondsport and check out books. But we do open this to anyone. So we have tourists that come and use it. I'm working very closely with the chamber to try and use it as a tourism ploy. That's a bad word, but you know, because I'd love to see tourism dollars bolster our local kid programs and stuff like that too. But it's also all ages. We have it from the very littles. We have story time every week for the under five crowd, but then we also have programs for adults. So yes, please.
Sally, do you see Mennonites and Amish people?
So we do in Hammondsport. We don't get them as often as, say, Penny Ann does. They have a lot of programs geared specifically to the Mennonites, and a lot of outreach programs, bookmobiles, that kind of thing. But in Hammondsport, we do see them. And we've actually had a couple of programs where the Mennonites come into the library and answer questions that folks have, which have been very well attended to.
Yeah, they take a lot of books out, don't they?
They take a lot of books out. They also, we have a book sale room in Hammondsport that runs every Saturday, and they are they're regulars of that, especially for homeschool materials, all of that. They actually just opened a little one-room schoolhouse 2 years ago up there. And so we made sure that they had books from, you know, a wide variety of subjects to start them off there. Yeah.
Anyway. Thank you.
All right. I'll pass it off to Elizabeth.
Hello, my name is
Morning.
Elizabeth Howley, and I am from the Wayland Free Library. Every year, all of us in the library system write a report. And the report that you have in front of you today is based on this. But what I'm going to talk to you about today is not in this report. This report will tell you how many books have been checked out, how many people have participated in our programs, but the most important personal connections and services taking place in our rural libraries are not part of any statistics, and they happen every day at the Wayland Free Library. People bring in forms and applications they need help with. Others have faxes to be sent, papers to be printed. Their apartment is freezing or too warm. A teenager broke his wrist falling off his scooter down the road, and he comes to us for help. People need community. They are lonely and they need an ear to listen. Agencies around the county also reach out to us and we reach out to them. We collaborate. Last week, I received a phone call from Office for Aging. They had a senior client living in Wayland in need of help. After the call, I made more phone calls, and I believe that we were able to get the elderly person an air conditioner before the heat spell. Many social service agencies do not have outlets in small rural community like ours. The library is one of few neutral meeting places where people from all walks of life are welcome. We help the local school, the court system. Yes, you heard right. When parents are in dispute, in some cases, the library is the only place where the parent without custody gets to meet their child on a regular basis. Our rural libraries are centers for literacy, centers for culture, and community centers. We offer numerous experiences and opportunities for learning for all age groups throughout the year. One of many goals at the Wayland Free Library is for all of us to understand and care for each other a little better. We are community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Candy Wilson. I'm from the Benedict Memorial Library in Savannah, or if you like our full name, it's the Dr. Sandor and Bertha Benedict Memorial Library in the Mary Helen Joint Meeting House. Don't ask me. It was before my time. Okay. Okay, so one of the things that we've been doing a lot in the library, and we have been getting more people coming in, is a lot of our events. One of the events that I started a couple of years ago, I did it every other week on a Wednesday because I could get in early enough to do that, was a morning coffee hour for seniors. I've now changed that to Saturday mornings, and I took seniors off, so we now have a coffee hour. From 9:30 to 10:30 every Saturday morning, I bring in a pastry, make coffee, people come in, and it's becoming more and more apparent that more people are bringing me in their technology with questions, because there's really not any place close to us to be able to get your answers made. And calling a call center, you're going to be on the phone for hours waiting for somebody to pick up on the phone or waiting for somebody to call you back or something like that. So they start bringing everything to me. One of the things that they've been doing a lot lately is giving me two phones and going, how do I change this over from one phone to the next? I just bought this new phone. I want to change over into this new phone, especially with the track phones. There's nobody to go to on a track phone. So I've been getting used to calling the track phone and talking to them and getting things changed over and setting everything up and telling people what they really need to have in hand to be able to do it. The other problem that I've been hitting a lot is Social Security. With the cutbacks and that, more and more people don't know how to do it. Many of the seniors that I have coming in right now don't even have an email address. and we start setting up the email address. We get everything going. It starts working, and a couple months later, they come back in saying, okay, I finally got my letter saying, let's go in and get into it. I said, okay, do you have your password to your email? My email? The one we set up for you. And sure enough, they haven't looked at their email, so they've lost that email. We have to set up a whole new email. And then once you do that, Social Security is not going to talk to you because it's not the same email. These are some bumps that there are that happen. And a lot of time people don't know these things until we hit them. So these are things that we've learned to be able to help people out with. The other problem with technology is scams. Scams are so much easier nowadays. They're anonymous and things like that. And many people don't even know that it's a scam until you listen to what they're saying and you start hearing some of the flags come up. And then you got to be able to slowly bring them around to realizing that this might be a scam. This may not be real. Check a few things. Look into a few things. I had one guy that comes in almost every day. He uses our internet with his computer because he doesn't have internet at his house because it doesn't reach out there. There's no cell service to there. So he comes in and uses ours. He got hit by one of the scams saying, your hard drive is going to be locked down and caught a call to Microsoft to do it. And he rushed over and said, can I use your phone so I can call Microsoft? And they're like, hold, let me take a look at that. And I took a look at it, got him back out of it. And it was just a scam. So these are things that libraries there for people, they don't know about. And they don't know about until they come in or call us. And a lot of people are relying more and more on libraries for technology services because libraries have always been willing to try new technology and see how it works and how it can help us and how we can avoid problems. So that's one of the things that helps the community is giving them that chance to come and talk to someone, a person face to face, not just call, get a robocall saying, okay, you're in line. It's going to be 3 hours. You don't have to wait 3 hours. They can come see us. We help. And if we can't help, we tell them where they can be able to get that help because we can usually find it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Denise Chilson, and I'm here on behalf of the Hornell Public Library and STLS members at large. Thank you. And I would just like to emphasize how critical your support is, not just for books and buildings, but for community connection, inclusion, and opportunity. At the Hornell Public Library, we are proud to serve far beyond our walls. We provide book deliveries to local assisted facilities. We partner with vital community organizations like the Hornell Area Family Resource Center and Children's Home to provide story hours. We're thrilled to be on the verge of launching our bookmobile, which will expand this outreach even further. We were able to make this happen thanks to Assemblyman Phil Palmisano and Mayor John Buckley and a $20,000 Bullet A grant. We've also seen a growing number of young adults ages 19 to 26 seeking community without the pressure of nightlife. They want safe, inclusive spaces, and we're responding with new and engaging programs designed just for them. We're proud to say that these programs are growing fast, and so is the demand. Preserving Hornell's rich history is another key focus for us. We're digitizing local newspapers and working to protect rare books, photographs, and artifacts. This $100,000 newspaper project will open access to students, teachers, genealogists, and community researchers. With a recent $20,000 donation from Penny Gray and her foundation and a $5,000 grant, we're a quarter of the way there, but we still need help. Finally, Hornell is changing, and so are we. At least 18 languages are spoken in our community. To reflect that diversity, we've launched a multilingual story hour, and we're working to create a multicultural hub where all families will feel seen, welcome, and connected. We're doing everything we can to serve all corners of our community, but we can't do it alone. With your continued support, we can help build a stronger, more inclusive Hornell for everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Any questions?
I'm sorry. Cornell, I see based on the allocations, you get $8,100 from this funding.
Yes.
Where do you get the majority of your revenues to operate your library?
So we're on a school tax levy. We used to be funded by the city.
Tax district.
I'm sorry?
You have a special tax district.
But we're on the school. Yeah, we're on the school tax levy. We were funded by the city of Hornell, and then it switched about a year before I became director. It was 2020.
And it went to the schools.
Yes.
Is Hornell just have one location?
The library?
Just one library in Hornell?
We have one library, and then we're adding the bookmobile so we can get to the places that people can't make it to the library. So we do go to Maple City Rehab and Elderwood at this point. Right now we like box up a carload of books, and we take our tablecloths and whatnot, and we set up, and it's kind of like a book fair, and residents come down, and it's probably my favorite day out of the year out of the month, to be honest. We get to see people, and some of these people don't have anyone to talk to. They've outlived their family and friends, and so it's a bright spot.
That's good. Thank you.
Welcome.
18 languages?
Yes.
That is a lot of languages.
It is. So I think it has a lot to do with Alstom. And you know, we're very close to many different universities and colleges.
Oh.
Yes, Joe.
Your allocation amounts, what is that based on? Population programs? Or?
Allocation for different programs or?
What is the amount that you get based on? How do they determine the percentage that you get?
So we,
the county,
yeah, of the 79,000 the county gives, how does it allocate it across the many libraries?
That's a good question.
Percentage
is based on population.
I think it's population.
So yeah, we each of us, based on the census data, therefore get that percentage.
What's interesting to me is, so Corning also is a special tax district, and it managed through the school tax. 15 years ago, they operated with six participating municipalities that funded the library. It was $640,000 a year they got. They formed this special tax district and increased to $900,000 and said it was never going to go above that. It got voted down once. It was approved a second time. They've been taxing since then. A year ago, they increased their budget to $1,500,000 from $900,000+. So why they would still get $20,000, the majority of these 79, why they would still get an allocation when they've basically more than doubled their budget from what it was, doesn't make sense. The small library should get the money, not these big taxing ones. My opinion.
I mean, I can speak to a little part of that. I know that like in Hornell, we're kind of a medium-sized library, but we rely heavily on libraries such as Corning, because they do have, you know, they have more funding. We can borrow books from them that we don't have. So with their purchase power, we're part of a 48, you know, there's 48 libraries in the system. So we can borrow from any library. So that's one part of it.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the Southern Tier system that you have.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Joe, do you have a question?
Not a question. I just want to compliment all four of you for speaking on the many, many, many little things the library provides. And I think a lot of people need to hear that over and over again, besides the books, besides the audio books and the ebooks and all that stuff. There's so many little services you provide. And I, you know, as you were all speaking, I was thinking, you know, how many times have I been to the library in the last year? Probably about 6 or 7. And all of them, when I need a fax to be done, I jump in the car, I go down to the Corning Library, do a fax. It's free. They take care of me. It's quick, fast, you know, just a little service like that. It's nice to hear. And I think people don't realize the value of a local library. And I just think it's such a good asset to have any community. A year ago, when My wife and I drive to Texas a lot, take 3 days to do it. I decided to get an audiobook on a novel, and I ordered it through Amazon. And when I told my wife, she hit the roof and she gave me an earful and said, why didn't you go to the library and get the audio? They got tons down there. So, you know, now when I need an audiobook, you know, to keep my wife happy, I have to go to the library and get an audiobook. So anyways, but nice job. I thought it was a great presentation. You really spoke on some things I think people need to hear. So thank you.
Thank you for that.
Any further questions? Well, thank you, ladies. Thank you.
Just another comment following up on Joe. I mean, we've heard from several different libraries over the years, rural libraries that are community centers. And that's what you're talking about. It is a community center where some people have no other place to go. And so, yeah, you guys do a great job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you
for your time today.
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you for your funding as well.
Thanks for coming. Sally, if you want to leave those on the front desk right there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a bicycle and want to make it to our community bike ride, Mr. Simplinski.
Yes.
That lady.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. I am Tess McKinley. I'm the executive director for Cornell Cooperative Extension in Steuben County, and I've been there for about 6 years now, almost. And I'd like to take the opportunity first to thank you for your support for the many years that you have been providing support to Cornell Cooperative Extension. We would not be able to do all of the programs that we do without you. So thank you. A little bit of history on cooperative extension. There is a cooperative extension in every single state in the United States. They're all tied to a land grant college. So there's Clemson State, which is an extension. There's Penn State Extension. In New York State, we are Cornell Cooperative Extension. We're the only cooperative extension that is tied to an Ivy League school. But I would like to point out, if you go to Cornell for agriculture, so if you go to the Agriculture and Life Sciences School at Cornell, that's a state school. So you're not paying Cornell prices, you're paying state prices. And we work a lot with that dean, and that's what Cornell Cooperative Extension is under. So please note that. So Cornell Cooperative Extension is statewide. We are in every single county in New York State. And every single Cornell Cooperative Extension is different based on the needs of that county. So, for example, in Suffolk County, they have a very large Sea Grant program. In Jefferson County, they do a lot with the veterans there. In Steuben County, we have 19 staff when we're fully funded. That's about mid-range for cooperative extensions. And we have three programs that we really focus on. So we focus on agriculture and natural resources, youth development, and nutrition. So our agriculture and natural resources, that's what most people know extension for, is supporting farming. We have one person, Susan Walker, who's our agriculture and natural resources leader. And pretty much any kind of inquiry that comes in related to farming or gardening goes through Susan. And she either answers it herself or she reaches out to the appropriate person for the answer. So Susan, while she is amazing, she cannot answer everything about anything living. So we heavily rely on regional teams that we pay into that are a part of Cornell Cooperative Extension. Those regional teams that we pay into with other counties include the Finger Lakes Grape Program, the Cornell Vegetable Program, and the Southwest New York Dairy Livestock and Field Crops teams. So what they do is they have PhD level and master's level people that provide classes and go on site to farms to provide support when farmers are having issues. Susan herself, she took over 200 inquiries of people calling about either farming or calling about something going on, whether it's there's some weird jumping worms or in my yard or my tree is not growing.
There's an emu walking up.
Or there's an emo walking around. Things like that. So we take a lot of interesting calls, and she either answers them or refers them on. Susan has also done a really great job of growing our Master Gardener program. We just went to a Master Gardener conference that was statewide, and Steuben actually had the largest team. So I was really proud of her for that. And those Master Gardeners, while they do know a lot about gardening because they are trained by Cornell University curriculum and by Cornell University professors, their goal is to support the community and do projects. So an example would be one Master Gardener is doing a pollinator garden underneath the Canisteo Living sign, which is pretty cool. We also have our youth development program. So our Ag in the Classroom program is less than 2 years old, and we have two educators that are doing an awesome job. This next school year, they will be in 10 of the 13 school districts in Steuben County so far. We're hoping for more, but so far. So we're really proud of them for that. They actually have served over 3,000 unduplicated youth in Steuben County, which is about 23% of the youth in the county. So they've made an impact there. The goal for Ag in the Classroom is to get more kids excited about farming and to help kids understand where their food comes from and how and get them excited for farming and to go into that as a career, especially since a lot of our family farms are declining in Steuben County. We also have a 4-H program. We have over 200 youth that are involved in that program, and they are the largest program in the Finger Lakes region. And while a lot of people know 4-H for farming, and most of our kids are kids that do a lot with animals and livestock, we also do a lot for pretty much any kid. Any kid can be a part of 4-H. So we do a lot around public speaking, crafts, cooking, baking, and various life skills. We also want to get the kids excited about careers. So we do send them to Cornell and other colleges to help them learn about what career they might want to go into. So we just sent a group to CareerX at Cornell last week. We also have our nutrition program, which is called the SNAP-Ed of the Southern Finger Lakes program. So we are actually in charge of that for 6 counties, but we are the administrators for that. So that helps bring in more money for our county. We have served thousands of people, and the goal for that program is to provide nutrition classes for people that are in poverty that are eligible for SNAP benefits. We go into food pantries, and we also go into very many schools for that program. Part of that program is the fruit and vegetable prescription program, where doctors refer people to us for classes. And then if they complete classes, they get vouchers to go get produce, and we help them learn how to cook with that produce. So it does help them with having better lifestyles. And then SNAP-Ed is also in charge of the veggie van now. That moved from under me to under them. And that program has a different model than most programs. So the veggie van is not a new thing. There are many veggie vans around the United States, but an organization has to pay for a truck, refrigeration, point of sale, insurance, all those different types of things. It's very expensive to do. So what we did was we actually pay a small stipend to a farmer to be in charge of all of that stuff. And we help make sure they're all set with the paperwork, and we get everything scheduled for them, and we advertise. And the funding that goes to them helps to offset all those things like delivering, point of sale, the extra insurance, things like that. And it supports local small farmers, which is always a good thing. That model that we're doing, because it is a cheaper model and because it is supporting local farmers, has now gone to 4 different counties in New York State. We started this about 4 years ago. So now Steuben, Chemung, and Yates are using this model along with Herkimer County. They just heard about it. We gave them all the information and they took it and ran with it, which is awesome. So out of all the programs that I mentioned, we are grateful for the county funding. So we are asking for $458,000 for our county appropriation, which is a 2.84% increase from last year, less than 3%. And what that pays for is for the agriculture program, so the regional teams and for Susan. our 4-H program, a small part of Ag in the Classroom. Ag in the Classroom is actually paid for mostly by schools, but it is subsidized a little bit by the county, part of admin, and for our office space. So for 2026, we're hoping to continue to grow our Ag in the Classroom program. The goal is to be in all school districts someday. We would love to be in all the school districts. I hope that happens, because that is going very well. And we would also love to grow our veggie van. We'd like to continue doing the great work that we're doing. Something that we do need to be prepared for is SNAP Ed. While it is done all over the United States and all over New York State, it may be cut from the budget this week, from the federal budget. So we might not have that program anymore. It's a $1.1 million program just for Steuben County that we administer for the six counties. So we may no longer have that. So 2026 would be a big learning year for us to figure out how we can still support the needs of the community without that program. But other programs are growing, which we are grateful for. So I do have information. I gave you, it's a long document that you have in your packet. I have a very short document here about all the numbers and all the great work that the staff have done. And while I pass that out, I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you.
So if you have 10 school districts, there are 13 in this county. So you're lacking three. What are those three?
I'm going to ask that.
Hammondsport, Cratsburg, and Avocon.
What did it take to get into those schools, or why are they reluctant to?
Thank you.
So, like, most of the schools pay for Ag in the Classroom with COSRS money. So that means that if they have a certain poverty rate, that BOCES will pay, for example, 95% of something that's billed through BOCES. So if we bill BOCES, say, $5,000 for a program, the school pays very little for that program because it is. So it's, I don't know why a lot of them, well, I don't know why three of them are saying no. Avoca and Prattsburg, they do have their own FFA program, which is wonderful. We want FFAs to grow, and we would be happy to work with them. But there is an FFA program in JT, and we still go into JT. So I don't know. If you're from that district or from that area and you want Ag in the Classroom in there, please reach out to your local superintendent and let them know that you want the program. Go ahead.
Joe.
I lost my thought there.
I'm sorry. I was jabbing.
Oh, the SNAP Ed benefits. Yeah, there is a good chance we're going to lose those benefits. How many families are we talking about? How many families has it affected? Will it affect it? Should we lose those benefits?
So, and this is just education. So, we don't provide the benefits themselves. We just provide the education for people, because if people are getting the benefits, they really should be learning how to eat healthy with those benefits. So just in Steuben County, we served in 2024 over 2,000 participants. And in the six counties, it was over 6,000 participants.
So when you say participants, families. Okay.
And wow. We do have a briefing with the state today on these potential cuts. It's somewhere between 10 and 15%. The comptroller's office sent out a report last night as well to you all. So between 10 to 15% of individuals in Steuben County receive SNAP benefits.
And what does that translate to the educators? How many?
So in Steuben County, we have two educators. So it would include 11 jobs that are paid for from the Steuben County CCE budget. So six of them are in Steuben and five of them are in other counties.
Are they talking about cutting totally?
Yes.
Mr. Wheeler, if you just said that 10 to 15% receive SNAP benefits in Steuben County, we have 32,000 people in Steuben County that receive some type of Medicaid benefits. So if we're talking 10 or 15% of those people, we're talking 3,500 or so people who are receiving SNAP benefits. So along the line, will you also be discussing the elimination of other Medicaid benefits besides SNAP benefits?
There is no elimination of
Medicaid. Third of the county, one third of it.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, the main question that we all have at the moment is ultimately the state controls the program and the eligibility and those sort of things. So it will be up to the state to see if they pass on whatever cuts the feds do, if they change eligibility, or there's a very real likelihood that they will pass on additional costs to the county. So it's kind of a no-win situation. Either benefits are cut or else the county absorbs more.
Yeah.
And we worry about additional, sorry, not to get sidetracked, but you know, that's why we want to engage with our state stakeholders as much as we can to try to anticipate, because there are some of the unintended consequences of, okay, if more people are losing this, then we're going to have more emergency needs that we have to provide under the law. So you're taking folks from one path, one program, and might not be the solution. And now they're going to be diverted to another, probably more costly program for us.
And I think we all know that if this bill passes, we've got our work cut out for us, and that's going to hurt a lot of people in the county. So it's going to be a tough one for everybody. So.
And New York State has shared that they will not cover the costs, which because they just don't have the money for it. So our goal right now is to support our team that are going to be losing their jobs at this time, if it does happen, and help them as much as we can. And then also help the community with nutrition education in a different capacity. So we'll have to look for either grants to do that or see what other nonprofits can provide that support instead.
So, Tess, can you just explain what Cornell does financially for Cornell Cooperative Extension?
What they do is huge. So they don't give us a lot of money, but they do pay for our health insurance and benefits, which is a big deal. And then they also provide a lot of oversight and curriculum and education for us. So we are grateful for that, for all that they do for us, yes.
So the $458,000 ask is actually money we give to CCE, because you mentioned it includes floor space or office space. That's not part of the 458. That's in addition to.
In addition, yes.
Didn't we put a value on that a couple of years ago when it was under question?
Yeah, it was like 30 grand a year or something like that.
So we are very grateful for that as well. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Shep.
Welcome Thank you for 2026.
Thank you, Tess, Thank you. Very much.
Very nice.
Jamie. Good morning, sir.
Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Thank you for the time. I'll try to be brief because I know, you know, had a long meeting with a lot on the agenda. Just wanted to give you a few updates. You know, it's interesting times for us because we also are dealing with the uncertainty on a number of projects of what's coming from the federal level, but we are also probably the busiest we've been in a long time. And the interesting thing with the projects we're working on is it kind of covers the gamut, you know. So, you know, just this week we approved a $10 million upgrade and expansion at Bellagioso Cheese. So supporting manufacturing, you know, they're doing a complete plant modernization, you know, going to be adding additional lines, you know, really growing that plant on this end of the county. Then you get to the other end of the county, and we've been working a lot with HP Hood and the communities of Hornellsville, the village of North Hornell, and the city of Hornell on wastewater treatment issues to help support, you know, HP Hood in their growth of Hell of a Good Dip. So the food processing, you know, sector is really, really, you know, advancing in our communities and growing, and we're glad to support that. But in addition to that, you know, we're seeing growth on other sectors as well. I'm very busy right now on the housing side of things. You know, we have redevelopments going on. I was just in Wayland last night at a school board meeting, drove down Main Street, and it was just phenomenal to see, you know, the burnout shells, which are no longer there, of the sections of Main Street that that got devastated in 2022. We've got new foundations, and soon steel will be going up on the complete reconstruction of what is going to end up being four buildings on Main Street. And we were glad to be part of securing over $1 million in state funding to support that. So a lot of growth there. We moved back to the eastern side of the community. Next week, Park Grove Realty will be in front of the Irwin Planning Board. They're talking about a $30 million project for 100 housing units in Irwin. And, you know, we keep our fingers crossed that very soon we'll hear an announcement on the county infrastructure funding that we helped the county apply for $1 million to extend infrastructure to that project. You know, very, very excited about that. Alstom, a lot of growth in the transit sector. Thank you for those of you who attended the ribbon cutting of their new shell car manufacturing facility a couple weeks ago now. That was a great event. They're going to be adding a couple hundred jobs there. And subsequent to that announcement, they found out that they got a big contract from New Jersey Transit. And the governor announced significant investments at the MTA, all of which are going to go to Alstom. They're now trying to figure out, because both of those were not, they knew they were in line to get them. They just didn't know when they were going to get those contracts. So now they're trying to figure out how much of that work is going to be done in Hornell versus how much is going to be done in Prattsburg. And we're continuing to work with Alstom on that growth. In addition, the CRISI funding that we were able to secure for the Alstom project in Kenona, we continue to work with our federal representatives on that project. You know, that's got to be a great story, because not only are they building next generation prototype freight engines in partnership with Norfolk Southern at Kenona, but as we've worked with them, you know, they've ran into some struggles with Buy America waivers. They're going to need some Buy America waiver content in that facility. And we've been able to work with Alstom, Norfolk Southern, and the administration. And we will need to submit two waiver requests to the administration. They're going to be approved next week, July 10th and 11th, hopefully, in France. For submission, they've reduced their offshore content from a cost factor of 80% down to 20%. So they've been able to onshore a significant number of the components. And we've been engaged very closely with both our Senate representatives, but also Congressman Langworthy's office. And we've been assured, because of the efforts and the work that Alstom has done to reduce that content, they're going to help push those approvals through the process, and we can continue to get that project moving in Kenona. So a lot of excitement going on around the transit industry. Moving up to Urbana-Hammondsport, since I was last here, we were thrilled to find out that the Curtis School Project received $1 million Restore New York Award, in addition to an $800,000 New York Forward Award. And we are working with the developer to get her final paperwork in to start construction on the Curtis School redevelopment into 24 housing units. That building's been empty as long as I've been at the IDA, which is over 14 years now. The community is very excited to move forward with that housing development and that redevelopment opportunity that is there. This is the third time this developer has attempted to go out and secure funding from the state, and we were fortunate enough to be able to get it this time. This year, this construction season, her focus is on securing the building, putting a new roof on, getting abatement work done so she can start construction in earnest early 2026. So again, a great project there. Dana Lyons, all you have to do is drive by it. They're doing great work at the Dana Lyons School. They are on track. They are thrilled with the support they've received with the community. They're actually, we're going to have the good fortune of going through the building next week, just to see the progress. We've seen a lot of pictures. That's an exciting project for the community of Bath. Renewable energy. I think we're 60-40, 50-50, 70-30, depending on what day of the week you ask me, as far as how we're moving forward with our renewable energy projects. Both the Canisteo Wind and the Prattsburg Wind projects would like to start tree clearing this fall. and then start construction in earnest next year to be energized by the end of 2026. Those projects will generate 300 plus megawatts of power. I keep looking at Jill because she always corrects me on my numbers when it comes to renewable energy. But it's over $1 billion of new investment in the community. And that's not a number that we can ignore, because it means millions and millions of dollars of new revenue to a lot of our rural communities. If you asked me Saturday night, I would say those projects are probably dead if the Senate bill got approved. The Senate bill did get approved, but there were some tweaks to the language on renewable energy. So we're probably back on the positive side of those projects moving forward because of some of the language that was changed. But who knows what the House is going to do. So I think there's a real risk that the renewable resources that have been being developed as part of, you know, an effort to have an all-in type of energy production in the state is you know, the risk is very real. So, but we are moving forward with getting approvals. That's why I was in Whalen last night to get the pilot structures in place. So if and when these projects move forward, we'll be ready to go. We talked about the Dana Lyons School. On the infrastructure side of things, we've been working very closely with Prattsburg on their downtown sewer project. There's been a few hiccups on some of the funding sources, which I think we're working through. You know, I think the last conversation, and Chelsea, you were part of that, was more positive than the previous conversation. So, you know, we're hopeful that project will get underway. The Town of Bath effort that we've been working on for quite some time, which would take sewer around Lake Salubria. They went out to bid. Bids have been received. They had six respondents, all within budget. And the engineers are doing the final review of the bid packets now, so they can be let, and work should start on that this fall, you know, at some point. So excited to be part of those. And then thank all of you for the support and efforts that went into the Small Business Roundtable. I know many of you were there. Unfortunately, I was not able to be there. I had to be in Hornell that morning. But Jill did a fantastic job of coordinating with Mr. Hanna and Mr. Cool, you know, to put that initial roundtable together. And I just want to give Jill an opportunity to say a few words about what we heard and the efforts that we're going to undertake going forward because of that.
So good morning, everyone. Good morning. I think you're aware of this effort, and what we were trying to accomplish is to engage a little bit more closely with the small business community, see what their needs are, if there's challenges not being met, if there's anything, any gaps we can fill, you know, we can achieve that. So Mike James and I did put together this roundtable. It was held last Wednesday in Hammondsport. We invited a multitude of businesses, came up with folks from nine businesses were able to attend. And there was a nice section from, you know, up in Pulteney, Hammondsport. We had some from Prattsburg even, and Urbana, of course. In addition to the nine business owners, we also invited Lindsay Wolf from REDEC and Kevin Peterson from Explore Steuben to talk about their organizations and what they can provide to the small businesses as well. And I think that's a key component of these roundtables going forward, is to talk about our partner organizations. Of course, the IDA could offer benefits and assistance, but there's other organizations that can help fill the gaps too. And I think that was important. So themes that came up, nothing I don't think, and Mike can chime in a minute, but I don't think there's anything that we hadn't heard in a while. Workforce continues to be an issue. In their perspective, it's more seasonal, which could be an additional challenge, you know, other than the year round. But as a side note, we can't lose sight of the fact that we want them to be year round. So while we're focusing on seasonal in the short term, there are efforts to make it hopefully a year-round economy as well. Some infrastructure issues were discussed, you know, power issues with NYSEG that were being addressed, and cell service, as we all have been up there and have had our challenges. So those particular issues I've been working on with the individual business owners, so we'll make progress there. And I think another important thing that came out of it was just the opportunity to network and talk to people, you know, talk to other small business owners that might not be down the street and they might be in different areas, but, you know, to exchange ideas. So I think with that topic that came up, I think we'll host another event in the future, maybe more of a networking opportunity than a you know, Q&A session, but we're going to hash that out in the future. So Mike James and I did meet last week to kind of go over the event, talk about future steps. I think we discussed maybe adding some information to the county website about how to start a business with some resources that might be good. We also discussed, again, going back to our partner organizations, you know, maybe bolstering some services to fill some needs. And I think just communication about what those organizations do and can provide for these small businesses is important. We did decide to do a second small business roundtable in the Irwin area in James's territory. So we're going to work on that in the coming months. That'll likely take place in September so we can get through the summer here with everyone. And as I mentioned, I think we're going to have another kind of meet and greet in Hammondsport probably later in the fall. Yep. So I know we had, you know, Chris and Jack and Kelly and, you know, Mike, of course. Hilda was there. I don't know if you have any feedback or anything you want to bring up for the go to the order here.
I think one of the things that I kept hearing was, where do I go? I don't know where to go. When they checked with the chamber wasn't helping them. Chamber's view on what they do was different than what I think new people starting out was. So,
yeah,
I mean, that one rang through.
Yeah. Yeah. We did hear some feedback that, you know, perhaps the goals of the chambers over the years have changed. So maybe that's an opportunity for us to go into the chambers, at least give them the information. If they're not going to maybe provide small business services, at least give them the information to direct them to where they could find answers. Maybe that's the way we go.
And Jill and I have talked a lot about just that feedback in general. And, you know, I think it's a good time to be hosting these types of conversations because there are a lot of new faces at a lot of the partner organizations. So, you know, when you talk about Small Business Development Center, you talk about REDEC, you talk about CSS Workforce New York, you know, and a myriad of others. There's been some staffing turnover and some focus, you know, the focuses of some organizations like the chambers have changed. So I think the timing is right to be having the conversations about, you know, how communicate, how these organizations communicate the resources and where the availability is for those resources.
And they get room tax dollars, the chambers do. And maybe some of that room tax dollars could be put towards building these lists or, you know, providing a service or.
Yep. Yeah. Something to explore.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So just to close out before we open it up for any additional just questions, a bit, you know,
Jamie, I just want to thank Jill so much for all you did in support of this program, trying to keep James and myself organized and headed in the right direction and hitting the dates and everything else. But you did a great job. We really appreciate it.
So, yeah. And I, at one point I just said to Jill, I'm getting in your way. Just take this and run with it. You need to do a great job. But again, just to close out, you know, thank you for your continued support. You know, our door is always an open door. I did want to, you know, I know Chelsea's getting up and speaking here in a minute, but I wanted to stress the importance of Chelsea and the work that STC does. I sit on the board, but more importantly, they are a fantastic partner to our efforts and the efforts that we undertake from an economic development standpoint. When you look at projects like the Alston rail car facility, that has EDA funding in it, that Chelsea and her team were critical. ARC money is going in. You know, I drive into town every morning and, you know, there's signs, detour signs about rail work that's going to be done to replace a rail crossing, you know, to support LP. That is a direct result of the work that STC has done in our community. The Route 54 corridor and looking at redevelopment opportunities. You know, it's great. And then just critical community support and development. You know, we talk at least weekly, sometimes daily, it seems like. And, you know, we talk about projects. Just this morning, she brought up Caton and solar development, Caton, you know, my hometown. And projects, you know, in Urbana and Prattsburg and Painted Post, and it just covers the gamut. So I want to thank Chelsea and her team for their effort and encourage you to, you know, to listen to what she has to say and support in any way.
Did he just steal your thunder?
He's got plenty of thunder, plenty. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
So I have a question.
Yes, Hilda.
So I was writing down some of the things I was trying to keep track of, you know, as you were going through it. There's a lot of projects in the works, and it's amazing, and you guys do great work. I know when I've gone to, and I've said this before, when I go to the NYSAC conferences and people complain about their IDAs, I like to say, not ours. We do a lot. We work together. But one thing I've always said, and now there's three of you, There are three IDAs. We never hear from the other two. And I don't know if they should be included in these roundtables. They're invited. I don't, maybe they were invited, but.
Well, to that end, I was, and I see Mayor Buckley just walked in. I was on a call this morning with the Hornell IDA on a project that we're working together on. Worked very closely with Mike Nesbitt and the efforts over there. Mike and I talk, I think he and I do talk daily. I could go through my cell phone and just show you all the calls that, between Mike Nesbitt and I on Alstom, on this sewer project that we're working on with the city of Hornell. Great partner. Jill is actually on the board of the Irwin IDA, and you know, we've always worked very closely with the Irwin IDA over the years. Their focus and the way they use their IDA is much different, you know, in the sense that they've always deferred projects to us, and they use it more as a financial tool for the community, which again is fine, and that's that structure allows that. So, you know, what I would say is that each one of us plays a different role in development, and we all work very closely together.
But I think in all the years I've been on, I saw Mike once and his predecessor once. I just come and talk about it. I mean, just be part of the discussion so we know what's going on. I mean, I have no idea what the Irwin one is doing. I don't know what Hornell does, but it would be nice to even be included in the roundtable or whatever, so people know that they're there.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
We last month we approved a resolution on this 20-year pilot.
Yep.
And there were some questions from folks on what does the pilot actually do? Can you give like a 2-minute?
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize.
What a pilot does.
Our communications got crossed, and I apologize.
It doesn't need to be that either. Specific one. It's just why does the IDA provide pilots? What's the benefit to the party?
So pilots or payment in lieu of taxes typically is a property tax reduction for a project. And I say typically because what you approved last week with the renewables is something a little different. So normally what we do is when we look at a project, our uniform tax exemption policy says we can offer pilots, and I'm paraphrasing here, to projects on any increased revenue that is a result of their project. So we don't impact what is already being paid. That stays stable and that remains. So we only look at new. And our standard pilots are either 10 or 20 years, depending on the project. The 10-year pilots are much more aggressive. And what they do is they provide a 90% abatement of the new assessed value, the new tax revenue. And then that scales down by 10% a year. So in year 11, they're paying full taxes on that increase. They're always paying on the same. Our 20-year pilot is more of a legacy pilot, I call it, because that's what we looked at and we worked on when I first started here. That is not as aggressive. So it starts out at 50% and then it scales down by 2.5% a year. But again, it's only on the new revenue. So the intent is to allow companies, you know, some level of property tax assistance during those critical years of either startup, or in the 20-year pilots is more about a financial tool. So, you know, it's usually most of the housing developments look at the 20-year pilot because they align it with their financing and they can get some level of certainty of what their taxes are. The renewable energy pilots are more about that tax certainty and that revenue certainty, because even with the state's new assessment model that they've approved, where on renewable energy projects, there's a model for the assessors to use on, I'd say 100% of the large projects, they come to us and they say, we want that financial certainty. So we want you to calculate our tax liability on a per megawatt charge, and we will pay that every year. And then that per megawatt charge scales up by 2.5% each year. So they know exactly how much they're going to have to pay every year. So when they go out and get their bond financing or their investor financing on a $1 billion investment, they know exactly what their tax payment is going to be every year. The resolution that was in front of the legislature, and thank you for approving it, what that did is that allowed us to fix that pilot payment and fix the distribution of that pilot payment. Because normally when we charge a pilot, we have to distribute it based on the percentage of the tax, the percentage that the municipal tax is made up of the whole. So normally about 60% of that is school tax, and then the other 40% is broken up between the county and the towns, and it varies a little bit. what happens with these large property, there are these large renewable developments, is the communities, and the community is really the local municipality is the one that really benefits. You know, they'll get all of this revenue in and they can do what they want to with it. And a lot of times they want to reduce taxes. Well, when they reduce taxes, they become a smaller part of the entire distribution. And we had a situation in Cohocton 10 years ago where Cohocton completely reduced their taxes. And the next year they didn't get any pilot revenue. And they were like, well, what are we going to do? So what we did after that is we started structuring the renewable pilots, the large scale renewable pilots, on a fixed payment schedule. So when you look at that schedule, you know exactly every year how much you're going to get from the municipality standpoint. So not only does it provide assurance on the development standpoint, but it provides assurance to the municipalities that they know exactly how much they're going to get every year. And we need the consent of all of the taxing entities in order to fix that structure. The pilot, we don't need, as long as we're following our UTEP, we don't need the approvals on, but to fix this, the payment structure, we do. So that's what was presented to the county a month ago. And Wayland School District approved it last night, and we're working on Prattsburg Wind to get the others in place. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that helps. Thank you. And the other benefit that the IDA can provide is a sales tax.
We can provide sales tax on taxable investments on any project. We can provide a mortgage tax abatement on whatever your mortgage amount is. And then we do have bonding authority. That doesn't get used quite as much, but on occasion we'll be involved in a bond financing type of mechanism. So those are our direct benefits in addition to, you know, the facilitation of accessing other benefits and incentives.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chelsea.
Nothing's better than going last asking for more money. And then Kelly told me, you know, don't ask. And so I need you guys to rally behind me right now. I'm going to pass these down. I'd like to spend time. I'm Chelsea Robertson. For those of you that don't know me, from Southern Tier Central Regional Planning and Development Board. I have a slideshow. I have a slideshow. I'm not going to go through all of it. I have printed it out for you so you can go through pieces independently. And I'm hoping this is the start of a conversation and you reach out to me. Start of a conversation and you reach out to me with any additional questions. Southern Tier Central Regional Planning Development Board. We're in Forney. We are a partnership student that we recognize a partnership between students, Skylar, and Shimong. And we are your federal partner. So it's been a roller coaster since January for us. We've not sure where we're going to end up, what it means, all changes on the federal level.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chelsea.
Little note in there.
PowerPoint.
Thank you.
Okay, perfect. And so the most important thing, we do a lot of different things, and thank you, Janie. We talked about some of the things I wasn't going to, but they're really important. But the most important thing we do is that we maintain your status, which is a federal status of an EDD and an LDD. LDD being local development district, EDD being economic development district. This is what gives you access to ARC and EDA money. We do a number of things in the way of telecommunications. I've been up here talking to you guys about the Connect All office. We've done some workforce projects recently, $10 million workforce project with the Northern Tier of PA. Training local planning officials. Many of you see me in the municipalities. I spend a lot of time in municipalities with my staff. But if you really want to know, this is our annual report. That has the in-depth what we did in 2024. So I'm not going to read that to you. So I'll let you read that. If you want to go to the next slide, please. Or do I have a way to do it? No, you do it. Okay. So how are we funded? County cash contributions. This is $205,000 that comes between Steuben, Schuyler, and Shimong County, represent about 15%, not about, exactly 15% of our budget. That is the only cash coming into the office, and we leverage that into a $1.4 million budget for our office. That's what maintains our office. Most of this is through grant funding. We need cash to match those grants. And what's happening is because of some policy changes on the federal level, as well as the fact that we've been doing more with less for a long time, we really are no longer able to leverage any more money. I mean, we're maxed out.
So, I was supposed to start with, when's the last time I asked you for more money? Right? No, no. 2007. So we have not had an increase from Steuben County, Chemung, or Schuyler since 2007. And we're very thankful for the money that we've had and the $85,000 that you've provided. We have been able to do more with less for a long time. We also haven't had an increase from the federal government since Clinton was president. So that's what we've been doing. And we've grown to an office of 10. We've just been able to continue leveraging those dollars. But again, we're maxed out at this point. If you want to go to the next slide. So how does that break down? So this is a formula, 50-year-old formula. Steuben, Chemung, they pay 40% of the total of $205,000. Schuyler pays 20% because they're tiny. I will go into it in a minute here. Steuben has been a big winner as far as what you've been able to walk away with. A lot of that is kind of the partnership that Jamie talked about, what we've been able to do with the IDA, what we've been able to do with Jack and the staff here with telecommunications, having Empire here helps, you know, things like that. You guys have really done well with the $85,000 that you put in. And so we are looking to ask for, because of these changes on the federal level, we also are not getting any money in the way to support just our indirect costs is what it is. It's our office space, our benefits. A lot of that's being cut that we're not allowed to get that out of grant dollars anymore. The state has never paid for that. We get very little state dollars. That's something we've been working on for years, but I don't anticipate it's going to get a whole lot better in the coming months or years. So next slide, please. Okay, so go ahead and go to the next one. I gave you all three counties. There we go, Steuben County. Perfect. I gave you all three counties' return on investment. So this is for 2024. You have a little booklet here. This is really cool. This explains exactly what Steuben County walked away with in 2024. We received $85,000 in cash contribution. You have a value that you walked away with of a return on investment of $720,000. That does not include the grants that were secured that you can see at the bottom. We believe that we've secured a $7 million grant with Empire Access for broadband expansion. There's also this Town of Thurston CDBG housing rehabilitation project. We've been doing this pilot program on rural housing. It's been great. Town of Corning has started in on that program for a housing assessment. So that doesn't even include that. You'll also see the regional initiatives. If you look at your little booklet here, the investment report, these are all the things that we do that benefit Steuben, Schuyler, and Chemung County. So the way that came, that's your regional investment or initiatives. That's your portion of it. That includes the Climate Smart Communities Program, a lot of the broadband work we do, the workforce program with Twin Tiers Arise program that works with the Northern Tier of PA to train individuals and put them in jobs in New York, the water quality work, the hazard mitigation work, the flood mitigation, leadership training conference, and a couple of these regional grants, one for the Southern Tier Library System and the CCC alignment with workforce needs. So, and then of course you also see your ARC grants that you received in 2024 in this county. So next slide, please. Next one. Okay, so these are the changes. This is the uncertainty we're facing. Cash flow is a real issue because it is July 2nd. I've received zero of my federal dollars to date for 2025. Those are approved. Those will come in at some point, but I'm running an office where I am reimbursable only, and I have zero federal dollars coming in. So it's not awesome. It's been a little rough, you know, and then the things that are at risk, EDA, the Planning Partnership Grant, that's that actual, that what's is our base funding, and the ARC, the ARC Administrative Grant, that is what runs our office. Those are the only base funding grants that we have. ARC and EDA may continue to exist. They may not. We don't know in 2026. I think ARC will. I think EDA may get cut, but we may not have administrative funding anymore. That may be what's cut from that. We also have a project with you guys, actually, Flood Safe Land Use Hazard Mitigation Plan. There's $50,000 of that through Department of Homeland Security. We're mid-contract on that. We're hoping they continue, but it's a five-year project, so we will see. And then our 604B funding, that's your water quality funding. That's what we do some of our flood mitigation work with, but really a lot of the lake work. And then this indirect policy change, we're fully expecting they're going to cap our indirect cost at 15%. That's a $100,000 cost to the agency. That means that I have, no, again, it affects my base funding. I have no one to pay for our rent, our lights,
our supplies or any of those things. So we're looking at potential losses of $718,000, about half the agency. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this is what we're doing. Through attrition, we know that we'll have a planned reduction of staff of 20%. We've already reduced travel. We're seeking all grants and funding. You know, there's some volunteer opportunities there for our staff that we've talked about that could save us some funding and, of course, reducing supplies and expenses. That's already happened. But really what we're looking for from the county is an increase in county dues to also make up that difference. So if we could get an increase of county dues of a total of $205,000, so that would be an additional $85,000 from this county, we'd make up about $558,000. That still puts me about $200,000 in the hole, but I'll figure it out. So next slide. So I'm not going to skip over this. The short of this, this is information. I was just curious. We have never done a survey, an assessment of those that use our services, and you should have received something in your email of what do you think of us? How is it working? What do you utilize? What works? What doesn't? What programs are valuable? What aren't? Here's a couple high-level survey results. The response was overwhelmingly positive, almost too positive. I'll be honest. I was expecting to have a little more. You could do better at this. What people value are the things I don't have money for, to be quite honest. So if you want to go, I'm just going to click through these a couple high level services. Everybody loves our planning trainings. Everybody loves a conference at the college. Everybody loves that we're in municipalities at night. And I'll be honest, there's only so much of that work that we can do with a staff of nine. There's only 5 days in the week, and usually you're not meeting on Friday nights, but sometimes you are. So that's kind of what we're looking at. Keep on, next slide, please. Here we go. So the proposal is pretty simple. I'm working on right-sizing my organization, aligning the work. I'll be working with the board. Some of this information is new to board members, some of it isn't. Over the coming months, as things on the federal level become more clear, we're coming up with a number of different budget options, depending, because I honestly don't think I'll have any clear answers when it's time to pass a budget in September. And we're asking all three counties, it is very important to maintain that 40%, 20% split to STC. This is a partnership with those three counties. So we are having the same presentation to Schuyler. They received it last week. Chemung, I'm meeting with a number of individuals next week. And so we'll continue this conversation. I think I'll be before all of you again in the coming months and working with the board as information becomes more clear. But that's the request, is how can the counties help us out? And what ideas you have, you know, again, we can pick up more work, but at a certain point, there's not enough hours in the day to do it. And there's not enough nights to be at night meetings. That's really, really one of the limiting factors, is we're already out in the field every night. Staff has to be able to take a week off here. So it's a challenge. And so I guess that is the very quick and dirty overview. If you want to, next slide, I think that's the end. Yeah. Questions, thoughts, concerns? I'm not expecting an answer today. Yes.
Why have you waited since 2007 to ask us for more funding?
So I've been director for 5 years. One of my main questions when I came in is, why do we do this way? I am open to other discussions about how to do this. Not all regional boards, many regional boards come and ask every year. What I was told is one of the main reasons, and we've talked a little bit on the board, one of the main reasons we only ask when we need it, basically, is because we do want to maintain that 40%, 40%, 20% split. And what happens is when you're asking every year, some county will approve it this year, the next year they don't, and all of a sudden you start losing that balance and that partnership with the other two counties. It's really hard to allow. As you can imagine, there's going to be hard conversations here about your budget on a number of different things. We're having the same ones in our office. Having that with three counties is that much more difficult. So maintaining that 40-40 split, 40-40-20 split has been really important to the board. I will also tell you, I came in at a weird time as director. We get hit with COVID. I think I'm going to have no money, and then money just starts flowing on us. And I was like, well, I can't go ask. We have money coming in. We're doing great. We grow the staff. We start doing all this other work. And so there was a lot of money coming in when I first started that I was like, well, we can work with this.
There was also one county that wasn't paying.
They did end up paying at the end of the day. It might've been December, But every year I got money from that county. Yes. But that was a challenge. You know, that was, I was just like, if I can't get my original 85,000, how am I to ask other counties? And we were having the discussions, what happens if a county doesn't participate? And I mean, it's very important to me to maintain that, that equal footing. And I will say at the end of the day, that county has paid every year. So
good. As far as the time, you said increase the timing of the payment.
So
we normally do it.
Every county does this differently. And I don't honestly know the history of why it happened. I couldn't find any information. But our payments from the county for our county dues usually come in three payments throughout the year. The first one, I think, happens in March or April for Steuben. But each county does it differently. I'll be quite honest. By October, if I'm in the hole, that's a bigger problem than you guys can solve for me. So having some of that funding, if it's already approved, having it more upfront allows, because all of my cash flow issues are between the months of January and June, typically. But with the federal government has always paid very slow. The state pays even slower for the small bits of state money I get. But because it's all reimbursement, I have no money up front. I'm literally operating an agency where I'm paying full-time staff for months on end for work and asking for reimbursements that may be getting months back. So the county cash is the only upfront funding, and the little bit I get sometimes from municipalities, they usually pay up front. Not always, but usually. So that's one of the challenges. So that would be a contract change, and I would work.
Important with why building up a $500,000 reserve for the.
Yeah. And that's been, I will say, I was
operating cash.
I was gifted a very nice organization when I took over as director 5.5 years ago. And we had a decent fund balance that we have been able to grow quite a bit. Yeah. But I will tell you right now, we have dipped into that reserve up to 600,000. Yep. So, you know, it actually needs to be. I told the board a couple months ago, I think we hit that $500,000 mark on our reserve a few months ago. And I honestly think it needs to be more because of those cash flow issues.
Yep.
Any other questions? Yes, Carol. So the way that the municipal contracts work is they pay for our hourly rate. We are evaluating what we're going to do about indirect costs. We charge our real costs to municipalities. And so we are, you know, right now we're under contract with most municipalities, but we are having those conversations. They understand that they need to contribute more. But in most cases, you're probably well aware, they just won't use our services. That there is a delicate balance with the municipalities that it's very easy to price them out, right? So those are conversations we're having, but we charge our real costs to the municipalities. Thank you.
Anything further?
Yes, Hilda.
So I just wanted to say, I know you've been you personally have helped us with our comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm. You're working on the Corning plan, our strategic plan. Your people are always, I do some of those classes that are offered at night. So you're very involved in what you do. And so we do appreciate it. So you know, don't wait so long to ask for money.
Hey, I'm happy to change the way we're doing things, to be quite honest. But when you walk into an agency and it hasn't been asked for 13 years, and then COVID hits, you're like, well, I guess but I'm being fried right now.
Please don't misunderstand the yes, that's not what that was.
I'm just, that's a suggestion.
Yeah, I was watching.
I could ask for more.
I was watching the expression on your face, Scott, on that one.
Just to start,
I do think that there's work to be done there. I mean, I will say that I don't come to the any of the legislatures enough. I typically come when there's a project that I think you're being interested in. I'm working on a grant. It's not something I see a lot of you out in the field on a regular basis. But I don't get the opportunity to have these discussions with legislators very often, and I should be doing that more. That's one thing that came out of the survey. I'm sure it was my board members, which is absolutely a correct statement to make, that I could be doing better, because a lot of times I'm at the municipalities, right? And it'd be helpful for me to be in these rooms as well. So
anything further?
Thank you.
Chelsea, thank you so much. Thanks for coming.
You have a great day.
Anything further from the committee? Motion to adjourn.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you.